quiet, Potter. In association with the Hyde Park Picture House, we are listening into a box office on Leeds Student Radio.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the box office on Leeds Student Radio with me, Oscar, Tom, Kyle, and Callum. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Cool. Happy to be here on the show.
It's good, isn't it? It's a good show. Yeah. Callum, how you doing today?
Yeah, doing good. Glad to be back.
Glad to be back. What are you presenting for us today?
I'm having a look at the news from the world of the film this week.
Kyle, you're back.
I am back. Yeah. It's good to be back.
Yeah,
and it's a great week to be back as well. Lots going on.
Yeah, a lot going on. What are you reviewing for us today?
I'm reviewing The Martian, which has been out a while now, but it's the first review we've got to, and so I'll be doing that.
Excellent.
Shortly.
Excellent. So, guys, we've got a great show planned for you today. We've got Kyle will be reviewing The Martian. I will be reviewing Suffragette. We've got a lovely little competition for you guys to win lovely free tickets to the Hyde Park Picture House, our brilliant sponsor situated right in the centre of Hyde Park. Tweet into us telling us what your favourite Netflix original series is. Guys, what is your go-to Netflix and chill?
Oh, that's a tough choice. I've been watching Orphan Black as of recently, which has been really good, but I couldn't pick.
Not at the moment. Too early to tell. Well, we'll get on to that later, guys. Let's find out what the UK's been watching so far this week.
The UK box office top 10.
Any guesses as to what's number one, guys? I'll tell you at the end of the list, obviously.
No.
No.
Yeah. No.
You know what? I reckon it may shock you, to be honest, but let's get to number 10. Number 10 is Everest, the star-studded disaster film starring Josh Brolin, Jake Gyllenhaal, amongst others. And have you guys seen it yet? It's never really... I'm not really a disaster film guy, so I haven't seen it yet.
No, what I've heard, it's very tense and very emotional as well, which what you'd expect of a film like that doing well, if I'm honest, narratively. But yeah, there you go.
At number 9, we have The Lobster, which is a film I really liked. I know some people didn't, some people did. It's a very polarizing film, as I expected it to be. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. Dark, witty, for the most part. Yeah. Number 8, we have The Intern, which is a film we bigged up last week. Thank you to Warner Brothers for giving us our prizes last week. Send us more prizes, please, Warner Brothers. But any of you guys going to go see The Intern?
Oh, I'll make sure to check it out when I've got time.
That's Robert De Niro, he's back.
Yeah.
With lovely Anne. Lovely Anne.
Yeah, excellent cast. Certainly.
She's dislikably lovely, Anne Hathaway, I think. That's how I describe her. Number 7, we have Legend, starring Tom Hardy, playing the Grey Twins.
Still hanging in there.
In his double role. Guys, what's your favourite double role by actors?
Parent Trap.
Oh, good
chance. Nice.
Not Doctor Strangelove, you went for the Parent Trap.
I went for the Parent Trap, yeah.
That's fair enough.
I mean, I like Doctor Strangelove as well, but Parent Trap.
Parent Trap just knows something about it. Have you any of you guys seen Adaptation, the Spike Jonze film?
No.
You should see it. Adaptation, Spike Jonze film. Nicolas Cage in fine form, playing Charlie Kaufman and his fictional brother, Donald Kaufman, who actually gets a writing credit and therefore an Oscar nomination. A fictional character has more Oscar nominations than we do, guys. We're slacking. We were born.
What's the usual suspects count as a double role?
I don't think so. I don't think Usual Suspects counts as a double role.
I don't want to say, in case anyone hasn't seen it, who's listening, but
okay.
You know what I mean.
If you haven't, what are you playing at, guys? Yeah. See the Usual Suspects. Sicario, starring Emily Blunt, Josh Brolin. It's a crime film. I don't really know too much about the film, but we will be reviewing it next week, as that is the film that will be showing at the Hyde Park Picture House on Friday.
I went and caught it the other day. It's an excellent, excellent film, which you should definitely check out.
Well, brilliant. We know who we can get to review that next week. Oh, well, you're not here, are you, Callum?
I'm not here.
I'll have to take on the burden myself. And number 5, we have Crimson Peak.
Oh, the new Guillermo del Toro.
Exactly. It looks very, very crazy. The man who brought you Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah. Is it feeling Pan's Labyrinth again, as opposed to Pacific Rim, which just feels like somebody's throwing all their toys at the screen?
To be honest, I was never really Pan's Labyrinth's biggest fan.
Those two
storylines didn't work for me. And I know it seems like quite a shallow reason not to like the film, but I did like how bizarre it was. I did like the mysticism. It looks great. But, didn't do it for me. Number 4, we have a film you'll be reviewing today, Kyle. The Martian.
The Martian. It's great.
Oh, you...
You spoiled it now, Carl.
Well, no, I'm joking.
I've got more to talk about than it's great.
No, I'm sure it's got a lot of positive reviews, so I'm sure that won't surprise people too much. At number three, we have Pan, which I don't think does have many positive reviews, actually, Pan.
No. I'm surprised Pan's that high up the charts. I've been hearing that it was bombing, but definitely not.
Yeah. Getting panned.
But if anything, it should be judged by the quality of the wigs. Has anyone seen the wigs that
they
use?
Is the wig game strong?
The wig game is awful.
Wow.
You can see where they've glued it on, and it's really awful. It looks
and
it looks like
ultra high definition as well.
It looks like a bad toupee is what it looks like.
Although any film which has Nirvana as a pirate chant goes up in my estimation.
Okay.
I am a fan. I am a big fan.
Okay, guys, at number two, we have another film I'll be reviewing today on the social. Suffragette.
Yeah.
Suffragette, which I'm not going to tell you about yet.
No, not yet.
And number one, anyone want to guess? You'll never guess in a million years, I don't think.
See, I might have accidentally seen what it is, so I'm just going to bow out on this one.
Okay. No, I'm not there.
Is it like a new Maze Runner or something?
Hotel Transylvania 2.
Oh, right. Yeah.
In 3D. I
thought Hotel Transylvania was the most bearable thing I've seen Adam Sandler in ever.
It's not him. I thought it was
Adam Sandler.
The large Kevin James.
It's Adam Sandler.
Is Adam Sandler as well?
Yeah, no, the Kevin James might be in it as well. Adam Sandler is Count Dracula, the voice of Count Dracula.
Maybe since his witticisms aren't in it, because his face is not in it,
yeah,
then it's quite bearable.
There you go.
Well, I don't know. I like some of Adam Sandler's films in his more. Not even some of his. Like, any of you guys seen Funny People? The Judd Apatow film? That's a great film.
I went to go see that on my 18th birthday, and it was not a great birthday, to be honest.
It's not an uplifting film.
It's very long, and it's like two different films in one, really, isn't it?
I love it.
Is it one of those films you'll think is really, really happy before you go and see it? You'll
like Marley and Me.
Yes, I wish
I hadn't gone and seen it on my birthday. One thing.
Marley and Me did so many people over on Valentine's Day, I think.
Yeah. Just like,
this isn't going to be a good Valentine's Day for anyone. Anyway, guys, me and Kyle even, went yesterday to see Suffragette at the Hyde Park Picture House. I had a good time. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I did.
It wasn't a date. Oh, yeah, Tom took me there as well. Apologies.
Yeah, sure.
And, okay, guys, so Suffragette is the story about the movement for women's suffrage in the early 20th century. In late 19th and early 20th century, the foot soldiers of the early feminist movement were forced underground to pursue a dangerous game of cat and mouse with an increasingly brutal state in the quest for equal rights. And this film builds brilliantly to the climax. Emily Davison's actions at the Royal Derby. Now, what I think English films do not particularly well sometimes is they have too much devotion to the subject. Actually, American films as well, like I've noted down films like Imitation Game, Fear of Everything, and American Sniper. They're so devoted to their subjects and their subject's cause that everything becomes black and white. And in this film, it's not an exception. In Imitation Game, you had I've forgotten his name. Alan Turing. Good, nothing wrong with him. Everyone else is against him. He's being oppressed, and then you have an oppressive government. It's very English films sometimes take things in black and white that aren't historically in black and white, and that's what they do in Suffragette. Did you find that, guys? Kyle, Tom?
Personally, I feel that there was an interplay between Brendan Gleeson's character and Kerry Mulligan's that was kind of a mutual respect of both causes that would slightly go against what you were saying there.
I
believe that the way that those two characters were written was the thing that was trying to balance the books a little bit.
I thought that was the most interesting parts of the film were the scenes with Kerry Mulligan and Brendan Gleeson. I would have wished for more of them, to be honest.
Brendan Gleeson is the grey area. I was about to say he is the grey area because he is part of the system, but he's also oppressed by it as well. He is the middle ground for everything. And his performance is astounding. I think it's the best one in the film. Like, all the performances are really strong, including Anne-Marie Duff as Violet Miller, which is also a really strong performance.
He is
able to put like so much sympathy, but also be manipulative. But you do feel like there's a moral, he has a moral compass that he's trying to adhere to, but maybe can't. And that was the best performance of the film for me.
He's a Javert type, Les Mis. He is the law. You know, his justice is the law, and that's what he follows. But it doesn't make him an
an unkind person.
Absolutely not.
I feel like he was one of the characters that I cared about the most in the film.
Yeah.
Just in terms of trying to identify... You thought he was a good, like, kind of a good guy at the start, like, in terms of... You could see that he agreed with them, but he's just going by the law. But then there was little bits in the film that made you think maybe he's a bit...
Yeah.
He's got that sexist kind of colour about him.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, but he was... For me, that was a real... It was too subtle for me, that grey area. It was too right. subtle. That, like him, Brendan Gleeson, as the grey area. Because there, when you look at the history of the suffrage movement, there is arguments that say they held back the vote for women in a time when the UK was in like disputes with Ireland and couldn't give up, couldn't be seen to give in to terrorism, to Ireland or the suffrage movement. They just couldn't give women the vote. That is an argument. It's not a completely flawless argument. That is an argument that the film fails to look at, and it fails to look at the war afterwards, the Great War. It's just like at the end of the film, we have Emily Davison's... No, there's no spoiler alert. It's history. we have Emily Davison's actions at the Royal Derby cut. Women get the vote in 1918. Mm. Misses out the Great War. So it I think it puts too much stock. But that's... I'm not going to get into history because it's so well crafted, this film, as well. Like, it builds up until that climax. It's such a slow burner. Like, did you guys find that? It's such a brilliant, like, I don't like getting into the pacing of film sometimes because I think it's just a word people use, like, oh, this film's too slow. It's not paced very well. This film is paced so brilliantly and just builds and builds. The violence escalates, the suffragettes' desperation escalates, and it just builds so well. It really tells the story amazingly. Did you guys find that?
It came across to me. When I was watching it, I thought this would be better as a stage show, to be honest. I thought it came across a lot better as a stage show.
Did you think so?
In terms of the drama, in terms of the sort of storytelling, the way they were going about it, like this event happened, this is why we're doing this, and then it was the big climax at the end. I just felt it would be better as a stage show. I thought it was a good film, but I just thought, you know.
But I don't know, because the cinematography was fantastic. It was so grey. It was beautifully dark and grey.
I had one gripe with the cinematography, actually, and that was the fact that they used shaky cam. The camera was never still, which I found slightly off-putting in some places. It was beautifully shot, but I just wish they'd kept the camera a little bit stiller. In the edges of the screen, it was always moving around, and sometimes we were in the middle of a crowd and we were throwing here, around, and everywhere, and you couldn't actually quite tune in to different people's faces. And I think that was my gripe with the cinematography.
Well, I know what you mean, but I feel like it really added the sense of disorientation and a sense of panic in these crowds. Like Selma does it as well. I do think it was done better in Selma, I must admit, than this film. But I did love the cinematography, the dreary grey, just representing like the outlook at the time. And after the end, and like at the end of the film, when at the Royal Derby, after. It's so dark that the fact that that is the literally the brightest lit scene in the whole film is when Emily Davison throws herself under the king's horse. One problem I did have. Do you notice how films use music too much? Maybe it's just me. They use music too much these days. You can get a lot more emotion just through silence. Yeah. The quieter scenes with less music, there aren't the emotional swells and the pianos and violins and all that rubbish. But I like music as much as the next guy, but you don't need it all the time. It's much better to have a sparse atmosphere. And that's what the film does really well, like the quieter scenes. Like that scene with Maud and Violet when Maud's been kicked out of her house by her husband. Maud's Carey Mulligan's character, by the way. And that scene where the bed breaks and they laugh. And that's a much more poignant and touching than contrived. One of the most contrived scenes in the film between Brendan Gleeson's character and Carey Mulligan's character. When we're half the population, we're half the world. Did anyone else find that contrived?
It needed to be in there. That was their kind of the line for the poster. But I mustn't say that I was too busy listening to the actual dialogue, I think, to really notice the music. It wasn't quite like a John Williams score where it really is the music dictating the all the emotion. But yeah, no, I don't know. I didn't actually myself notice the music, I must say.
I do think it falls to some of the pitfalls. Tom, were you about to say something?
I was just going to say, I didn't really notice the music in this film to be... Are you saying it was a really good addition or just...
It was too much.
Too much.
Didn't need it, I think. Like, films like this do try and drag sympathy out of you
I do feel like,
and I think they're the most effective when they're trying to be the most like when in moments of humour rather than plight. You know what I mean?
I feel like when you've got the kind of actresses that were in the film as well, you don't need music to distract from the drama that they're creating.
Absolutely, the sheer presence of Meryl Streep.
Yeah,
for the when she arrives, that moment where she arrives in the film. There is such a gravitas to it, and it's just her. Yeah, it's just, okay, right, Meryl Streep's now in your film.
There were people saying that they were disappointed that the fact she wasn't in it that much compared to, like, when you see it in the adverts, it looks like she's going to be a main player in the film, whereas she's only in it for about 5 minutes.
Well, playing Emmeline Pankhurst, who was seen at that time as sort of a cultish figure, I guess, like, you need to be aloof, you need to be sparse, you need to add to that mystery, and I think Meryl Streep does that really well. So, guys, final thoughts on the film. What would you recommend seeing this film?
I would, personally. I think what it does better than... I think it's best at showing what Britain was like before the vote. I think it was a really good document of kind of re-highlighting the issues that started feminism as we now know it. We kind of can forget how far we've come, almost, in those arguments, and that's what it did excellently for me.
Tom?
Yeah, I agree completely with that. I just feel like it is quite relevant now as well with all the wage in the news, and Jennifer Lawrence has brought up this as well, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously relevant, and it's a predictable story, but then it's a biopic, so why wouldn't it be?
I do think the history needs to be taken with a pinch of salt. But it's such a one. It's really well crafted, just a really well crafted film that doesn't ram it down your throat as much as The Imitation Game did with the oppressed figure, but could be more subtle at times. But a really enjoyable film that you can have a lot of sympathy with. Guys, be sure to tweet us at This Is Leeds Student Radio, telling us what your favourite Netflix original series is. He hasn't got Twitter, but Scott Coleman has Snapchatted us saying that he loves Narcos. Narcos is his good favorite. Show. Any of you guys seen it? I ain't seen it yet.
I've seen the first couple of episodes and it's fantastic. I really need to get into it.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
It is a thing.
I'm scared to watch it, like, out of fear of comparing it to Breaking Bad, but I've heard it's quite different.
It's a very different show from Breaking Bad. Yeah. Very different. But, much more violent.
But similar themes. That's the area. That is drug wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That is sort of dealing with.
It's based on a true story, this one, though.
Okay.
Okay, guys. Callum, how about you tell us what's new this week? Callum.
So, in the news this week, obviously the major day this week was Back to the Future coming. It wasn't an anniversary, it was the day in which they travelled to the future in the second film. And the biggest story had to be the Star Wars tickets and trailer being released.
Oh, who saw the trailer?
Excellent.
Absolutely amazing trailer.
Yep, I'm fan.
Where's Mark Hamill?
Who needs him?
We don't need him.
Who needs Mark Hamill? Seriously. Yeah, guys, do we need Mark Hamill? You can tweet into us saying...
He does a good Joker.
Yeah.
As a potential spoiler, some people are suggesting that his character might have a more sinister side in this
right.
Oh, maybe why he doesn't appear. So there were a few other trailers released this week, which includes the first full trailer for David O. Russell's new film Joy, the first full trailer for Dad's Army, and the debut trailer for the troubled Western Jane Got a Gun. Did any of you guys see any of those?
No, but I want to see the Dad's Army one, certainly.
Yeah, it's not looking good for me.
Really? Oh, okay. Good. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. And the first reviews of Spectre are in. They're looking pretty good, but not quite as good as Skyfall, which I'm a little bit disappointing, but there you go. Lionsgate have been busy announcing the cast for the Power Rangers movie all this week, with Naomi Scott as the Pink Ranger, Dacre Montgomery as the Red Ranger, Ludi Lin as the Black Ranger, and RJ Clyer as the Blue Ranger. Any of you fans of the Power Rangers?
I remember watching it as a child.
Yeah.
I don't remember much of it.
No, neither. And Chris Rock has been announced to be hosting the Oscars.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, like,
it's a good choice. Were
any of you disappointed with... I actually thought he was okay. Everyone was saying how rubbish Doogie Howser... Not was Doogie Howser was. I thought he was quite good.
I didn't watch it, and I heard it was very forgettable.
Wasn't as bad as Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah, Seth MacFarlane. It was funny in certain places, but it was...
I quite enjoy Seth MacFarlane. He's not Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes, but I do think he's quite good.
Yeah. And just to finish off, Johnny Depp is in talks with Edgar Wright to star in an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's time-travel tale of Fortune and Milk. And to end on a piece of good news, the director of Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, has confirmed it is the last in the series. So no more Paranormal Activity.
Excellent.
I guarantee it is not going to be the end of the series.
Well, Saw ended, so...
Oh, maybe. Yeah,
fingers crossed.
They have, like,
Saw can be resurrected at any time.
I know. I'm not happy about it.
But, like, Paranormal Activity is like a universe now. It's like Marvel. There's a Marvel, there's a Paranormal Activity universe.
Paranormal Activity, the first one was good, and then it was just downhill from
there. Was the first one good, though? Or was it, like, a worse Blair Witch project?
The first one was above average.
Was above average, fair. I can live with above average. Can you live with above average, guys?
Above average? Well, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I meant, do you agree that Paranormal Activity was above average?
Oh, I think it was average.
It's not the kind of film that I like, just generally.
Alas. But a film you do like, Kyle...
is...
The Martian. Martian.
Yes.
Jinx.
So...
You owe me a Coke.
Oh, okay. Okay. The Martian. If you're unfamiliar with the plot, astronaut Mark Watney has been left behind on Mars after a storm, thought by his crew to be dead. He's without food or water or any ability to communicate home, and he must use his scientific ingenuity to attempt to save his own life. It's directed by Ridley Scott and stars Matt Damon as Mark Watney, as well as Jessica Chastain, Kate Mara, Sean Bean, Jeff Daniels, Chiwetel Ejiofor. The list goes on. Lots of people that you recognise are in this film. I'd say it was the most enjoyable sci-fi I've seen in a long while, and I actually class Gravity and Interstellar in that. Mainly because... you've got your hand up, Oscar. Do you want to chip in at this moment?
We don't talk about Gravity on this show.
Well, I was just saying that this film was better than that.
Everything's better than Gravity, Kyle.
No, unfortunately, I'm going to have to veto this silence to continue my review.
Listen, I'm a pretty democratic guy for the most part, but yeah. I will bring down my iron fist like Stalin in this place if Gravity is mentioned again.
Right. Okay.
Or never back down.
I'll call it the G film then. Okay, but basically, what the G word
is the G spot. It's quite sensitive for me.
Yeah. Clever,
Kyle.
What it brought to light for me was the whole idea that science fiction as a genre is a spectrum. It's got science on the one side and fiction on the other. And most films that are sci-fi, or the past classic sci-fi, like Star Wars, they have to lean more on the side of fiction because the science is not really there to support it. What we've got now, which is really interesting, is the fact that science has really caught up with the fiction. And therefore, we've had a lot of films that are very science-led science fictions. Things like Gravity and Interstellar, or the and Interstellar. But what was interesting about The Martian is for the first time it actually felt natural. Berber and Interstellar both take themselves way too seriously, in my opinion. They are about exploring this kind of like dystopian... They're about exploring the science for the science's sake and not really for the sake of enjoyment at some point. It's spectacular, but not necessarily fun. And that's what The Martian was. The Martian was unrelentingly fun and enjoyable and felt like a Hollywood blockbuster movie about space that was believable.
You say that like... It was fun. Like, was Interstellar not fun for you? Like, films like Interstellar?
Interstellar...
I understand how it may have taken itself too seriously at points, but I feel like The Martian has some very serious... From the book, you have some very serious concepts to do with isolation and loneliness. Was that explored at all during the film?
It's isolation and loneliness, yes, they do come up. And I think that's the testament of Matt Damon's performance in this. He manages to balance hope and despair incredibly well. And in a way, actually, you can contrast him with his role in Interstellar, where he's basically doing... He is in the exact same position in Interstellar, only it's a planet that's a little bit further away than Mars.
And he's bad in Interstellar.
He is bad in Interstellar, but even if he wasn't... You know, from the two characters, I would prefer to watch Mark Watney over his bit in Interstellar any day, because the story's just so much more interesting. Mark Watney is a fully rounded, genuine character, as opposed to somebody who is bad on the fringes of space for the sake of being bad at that point in Interstellar, when none of the rest of the narrative ties up anyway. It was a rounded story. Of course, it would be coming from a good book. I've not read the book, but I've heard great things about it. It's usually book adaptations usually do hold together better story wise, and this certainly had that. I thought it was really fun and funny, which for a Ridley Scott film, Ridley Scott doesn't really do comedy, and certainly proved that in Prometheus. That was the drabbest film ever, really.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Ridley Scott has been back on form, because he's had a pretty poor show the last few years with Prometheus, which was probably his best, but The Counselor, and there were a couple of others as well, which were not good at all. Good.
I think Exodus, Gods and Kings.
Oh, yeah. No, we can forget about that.
That's a dark spot on his hurts. And Christian Bale's resumes. Absolutely. I think. Mm. But Kyle, go see them. Is it out of cinemas now, actually, The Martian?
I don't think so, considering it's still like number 4, isn't it? In the charts.
Oh,
yeah,
isn't it?
I reckon it'll be there for some time. Put it this way, actually, from all the people that I've spoken to recently about what films they want to go and watch right now, The Martian almost trumps 007.
Wow.
People genuinely do seem to really care about this film. For one thing, actually, I've been speaking to some scientist friends of mine who do the sciences at Leeds, and they find it really good as an example of scientists being real people as opposed to a strange nerdy weirdos.
Yeah.
For a first time, Mark Watney, Matt Damon's character, speaks their language, unlike the kind of Alan Turing's of this world. Yeah. That's a bad example because Alan Turing was a real person, but the way he's presented,
the Sheldon Cooper,
that was a far better world. Likening.
I'm doing aerospace engineering myself, and I just felt like you could connect with that character, and he actually did speak in the way that we speak at uni about problem solving, and that's what I liked about the film most. It was problem solving rather than throwing action in your face all the time.
Yeah.
So I think is Matt Damon good casting then, because he is sort of like a New England Boston everyman for a lot of the part, don't you think? Is he a good casting? He's just a cool guy.
I think from one of my friends who's read the book, he says that they've got the casting and the tone of the film spot on in terms of like the character wise.
It's got Childish Gambino in it.
Oh, yeah,
Donald
it does, Glover.
Not Donald Glover.
Yeah,
is it Donald Glover?
Yeah, Donald Glover.
I get him mixed with Danny Glover. A lot.
Isn't that the guy from Die Hard?
Very similar name. Lethal Weapon. That's the one.
Yeah.
But Danny Glover's not in it. Donald Glover is. And Kyle, The Martian's a good film.
It is. It's a great film.
We can say
very the more enjoyable than there and Interstellar.
I think from now on we should like we'll think of a name for Gravity. Like,
but why are you allowed
to say it?
You can't say it.
I'm going to go wash my mouth out with soap. Okay, guys, someone has tweeted into the show. Thank you, Rory Ellis. He says, my favourite Netflix original series has to be Daredevil. Great action and well choreographed. Bit like Never Back Down. Thank you, Rory. Guys, be sure to download the LSR app at thisislsr.com. Nice chair manoeuvre there, Callum.
Thanks.
You
are
very
smooth.
You are very tall. That was a bit like, I thought you might be a bit high in your chair, actually.
Yeah, I realised I was way above the microphone. So,
he's decided to come back down to everybody else's level.
Callum, how tall are you?
6'4".
And I'm 5'8". He's just trying to make me feel good, I think. Anyway, guys, be sure to follow us at ThisIsLSR on Twitter. Tweet into us saying what your favourite Netflix original series is, documentary, anything like that, to win 2 free tickets to the Hyde Park Picture House to go see any film you like, basically. Like, they just give you a nice little pink ticket and you can just hand it in, go see any film you like. No time period, no nothing like that. So, Tom, you have a quiz and then a review for us, don't you, mate?
Yes, I've been meticulously preparing this film quiz, so I hope you're all ready to be judged.
And we are off.
So, I've tried to include a lot of different things from around the film world and some curveballs, so be ready. I heard Rhys give people quite a walloping last week.
Yeah, he did.
So is it? Yeah, I'm ready. Yeah. I'm ready.
All right, let's start.
Knuckles cracked.
So this is the Leeds Student Radio box office film quiz, and question one: the stunning backdrops of Ridley Scott's film The Martian were filmed in Wadi Rum in Jordan, but which other Ridley Scott film used the same location? Is it A, Gladiator, B, Alien, C, Prometheus, or D, Kingdom of Heaven? Oscar?
Is it Gladiator?
No, it's not.
Is it Kingdom of Heaven?
No, it's not.
Oh, no.
Prometheus?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wow. Prometheus. Well, they obviously coloured it very differently.
They coloured it a lot differently, yeah. Question two. Which James Bond, when asked, "Are you looking for the shells too?" replied, "No, just looking."
Sean Connery.
Yes.
It was Dr. No, that.
Yeah, it was Dr. No. And for a bonus point, can you tell me the island on which it was set?
Dr. No's Island. It's not the Isle of Man, I can assure you that.
It's probably not the Isle of Wight either.
No, but I wouldn't know.
I can't give you the Isle of Man, I'm sorry about that. No. But it's Crab Key Island.
Oh, yeah, okay. Why does he need the bonus point? He's two in the head anyway.
Question three. Back to the Future Part 2 has been in the headlines this week, but can you tell me the name of Biff's casino in 1985? Is it A, the Grand Palace, B, Eternal Temptations, C, Pleasure Palace, or D, the Oasis?
Is it the Pleasure Palace?
It is the Pleasure Palace. What else would it be?
Haven't even seen it. What a guess.
Question four. This week, Bruce Willis says he thinks a Die Hard prequel would be a good idea. But can you tell me...
Is the answer no?
Can you tell me, how is hacker Frederick Claudius from Die Hard 4.0 better known? Is it A, Warlock, B, Wizard, C, Weasel, or D, Walter?
I have no idea. I'm going to bang out this one.
Yeah. I'm going to give Warlock a guess.
Warlock. It is Warlock.
Hey!
I stopped with Die Hard as soon as Rickman left.
Yeah, I've never seen Die Hard 4.0, so that was a complete guess.
Well done.
Right, so we've got a curveball here. Where is the Zoltar machine found at the end of Big?
Oh! Is it... It's not in the carnival anymore, is it?
No. Is it A, Battery Park, B, Sea Point Park, C... Did I just say C twice?
Yeah, we've got two Cs.
All right, okay. A, Battery Park, B, Sea Point Park, C, Riverside Park, or D, Riverbank State Park. It's really hard, this one. I'm sorry about
it. Is it Riverside Park?
It's not Riverside Park.
Oh, no.
Is it D, whatever D was?
It's not D, whatever D was.
Is it A, whatever A was?
No, it's not A, whatever A was.
Well, then it would
be C Point Park.
It would be B, which was...
Sorry, that one was a bit hard.
So, what's the score? It's I've got one.
I've got one.
You've got one, and Kyle's got two.
Okay. We've got three questions left, so...
Okay.
We can pull it back. Yeah.
Mate, can I just say, great selection on the music. This is
love this song.
As featured in Whiplash.
So, question six. We saw Suffragette last night, so which of these actresses is a close relation to H.H. Asquith, who served as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom in 1908 to 1916 in the prime years of the Suffragette movement, which he opposed, by the way?
Yeah.
Is it A, Helena Bonham Carter, B, Meryl Streep, C, Kerry Mulligan, or D, Anne-Marie Duff? Oscar.
I'm going to go Helena Bonham Carter.
It is Helena Bonham Carter. Have you been researching this?
It just seems like it made sense to
me. Yeah. Great granddaughter, apparently. Nice. Question seven. What is Count Dracula's arch nemesis Van Helsing's first name? Is it A, Theodore, B, Claus, C, Abraham, or D, Irving?
It's not Van.
Theodore.
No, it's not Theodore.
It's Abraham.
Oh!
It is Abraham.
Darn it.
Hold on. This is the last one.
Oh, and is it Tool?
Two for me, two for Kyle, one for you, Callum.
I just got another point.
Have you got one? Okay, there's two all. This is game breaker.
Oh,
wow.
This is the decider.
Any of you ever play FIFA Street 2 on the PlayStation?
Oh, yeah.
This is the game breaker, guys. This wins it all. Go for it.
So, question eight. In 2001, which director beat Ridley Scott to the Oscar for Best Director? Is it... Oscar straight away.
Is it Ron Howard?
It's not Ron Howard.
Ah. We've not even had the multiple choice yet.
Not even had options. So, you've used your answer
out.
Already. The options were, is it A, Stephen Daldry, is it B, Ang Lee, is it C, Steven Soderbergh, or is it D, Ron Howard?
Ang Lee.
It's not Ang Lee.
Is it Stephen Daldry?
No, it's Steven Soderbergh.
Human Traffic.
It's a three-way tie.
Human Traffic,
Do we have a tiebreaker question?
That was the tiebreaker question.
Well, come up with something off the top of your head.
What is Matt Damon's full name, character's full name in Interstellar? First hand up. Oscar.
Manison.
No.
No. I have no clue. I'm sorry.
Dr. something.
It's Dr. Edward Mann. Does that mean I win?
You win your own quiz.
To be fair, I said Manison. Is that close?
It's half close. I'll give you half a point.
He still wins on half a point. There you go.
Go on.
So, well done, Austin.
Winner on 2.5 points
is you.
I'm very happy. Okay.
That was
a lot of fun. Thank you, Tom, for arranging that. And you've also done a review of us for us, the Netflix original feature, Beasts of No Nation.
Yeah. This is Netflix's first original feature-length film that's came out recently. And it's been getting quite a lot of headlines because film theatres have been boycotting it because Netflix wanted to release it as the day cinemas were going to release it, which did not make them happy. But I mean, it's great for Netflix getting all this publicity for this film. But anyway, the film follows the story of a young boy named Agu, who's played by Abraham Attar, during a period of civil unrest in this unnamed African country. And anyway, events conspire and result in Agu being inducted/kidnapped into a group of rebel guerrilla soldiers led by the commandant, who is played by Idris Elba. And you basically see him change and see him morph into this child soldier throughout the film. It's quite harrowing tale. And the first thing I sort of noticed about the film is in the first 10 minutes, they've like got you like that. You care about the characters. You care about his family. You care about the story. And after the first 10 minutes, it just goes horribly, horribly wrong. And you see, in the first 10 minutes, you can see his joy, you can see all his emotions, and then it just suddenly changes to this induction into this rebel group, which involves him doing a lot of strange, disturbing tasks kind of thing. I'm not going to go into it too much. But
Can I ask, Tom, question? A lot of the times when people say, I really felt sympathy for these characters, like in Suffragette was one, do you believe it was the craft of the film, or do you believe it's just because you're a human and you're naturally sympathetic? Is it down to the film, or is it just down to people who watch the film being good?
I think it's down to, you've been as a human just relating.
Just being a natural human. How much of your sympathy was down to the craft of the film, do you think, whereas as opposed to you just being a naturally sympathetic person?
I think it's down to the craft of the film, to be honest. I think mainly for me it would be down to the quality of the actor's performance, which in this, it's ridiculous how well this kid can act, this Abraham Attar, who's only 14, he hasn't been in any major releases or anything like that, and he just came out of nowhere, and his performance is, like, breathtaking. It's ridiculous. I mean, people have talked about Idris Elba getting Oscar noms for this film, but to be fair, the standout performance is Abraham Attar as young Agu. And some people have said about the film about it being too much, too disturbing, the scenes in it being too far. I feel like all the scenes that are used in that way are used to progress the character rather than just be endless violence for no point whatsoever. And people say about these disturbing scenes, I found the most disturbing scene, to be fair, to be one of the less violent ones. It was one where Agu it's about halfway into the film, and he's went through all these changes. He's had drug use and stuff, as they do in these sort of rebel guerrilla squads. And he's just sat, there's another kid getting inducted into the rebel group, and he's doing this thing where they're all shouting, yes sir, like that kind of stuff, to get them in the mindset of being a child soldier. And Agu's there just laughing. Like, you see the same joy as you did at the start of the film when he was with his brother and he was with his family, but you see him laughing at this kid getting inducted. And then in the background, you just see the horrific events of what the rebel group are doing to just innocent people. Agu looks over, sees it, starts laughing and just keeps laughing. And I thought that was really disturbing.
The way you describe it is kind of like a bit like a City of God sort of loss of innocence sort of motif that you're talking about. Do you compare it to that, maybe?
I feel like, the loss of innocence is definitely amplified massively in this film. I feel like it has similarities to Apocalypse Now in weird ways.
So look at slipping into madness.
Yeah, like slipping into madness. And there's always this, there's this voiceover that's not used too much, which I like, because I don't like it when there's too much voiceover work and you just can't get into the film. And there's a voiceover of Agu, but it's like a retrospective voiceover, and he's sort of saying, oh God, what am I doing, and this sort of stuff while it's happening, which I think is really nice.
So you highly recommend this film?
Definitely, highly recommend this film. It's great. People have had a go at it not being relevant, but does it have to be relevant? It's a piece of art.
To be good.
The director's came out. Director who's directed True Detective just came out and said, I'm not here to educate people, I'm just here to show them a great film. And it is a great film.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tom. Guys, you are listening to Box Office on Leeds Student Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Box Office on Leeds Student Radio with your host, Oscar. Yay!
Okay, so like we said earlier, this is a Netflix original, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Netflix is the godfather of the media industry.
Apologies.
That wasn't planned. That was, guys, what is your favourite Netflix original series, may I ask?
You go first, Cam?
Yeah, I would not know where to pick. I have binge-watched far too many Netflix original series. House of Cards, the first two series of that, some of the greatest drama I've seen. The third series was a massive letdown, though.
Yeah. I'll skip it. Callum? Not Callum, Kyle. Sorry, Callum.
Mine was going to be House of Cards. I've watched a lot of series on Netflix, but actually the usually old BBC ones. I haven't caught up on the original stuff, particularly that. But at the minute, I'm watching Mr. Robot, which is fantastic. It's an Amazon Amazon Prime similar arrangement to Netflix.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A series about a guy who works for a cybersecurity company but has very anti-establishment views and wants to basically be hacking into the people who he's actually paid to protect.
Tom, is it fair to say your favourite Netflix original is now Beasts of No Nation?
Oh, it's definitely my favourite original film since it's the only one.
It's the only one.
But the original series, I would have to say Daredevil. I really like Daredevil. I went through it in about 2 days. And it just, I feel like it did a great job of making me forget about the horrible film that was released a few years ago.
I like Ben Affleck as Daredevil.
No,
I don't like the film in the whole, but I do Ben Affleck as Daredevil. I think he is good, and it's a good audition for Batman. My favourite Netflix original is BoJack Horseman.
Oh, good God.
BoJack Horseman is a fantastic Hollywood satire inside joke if you have seen the show.
Don't go into BoJack Horseman thinking that it's going to be a hilarious comedy, though. As much as it is funny and black humour, it will leave you feeling a little bit down by the end of it. Yeah.
Downer endings, guys. it is really good. Like, it deals with such difficult topics such as loneliness and inadequacy and just stuff like that. And Will Arnett as BoJack Horseman is beyond.
It's
beyond
very
fantasy.
Different from anything I've seen.
And Aaron Paul, how good is Aaron Paul as Todd? He is just brilliant. Okay, guys, we were talking a bit earlier about how, like, Netflix and you said Amazon Prime, streaming websites. How do you reckon this is going to affect the film industry? Just a quick summary before we leave.
I don't feel like it's going to affect it in a negative whatsoever. I think.
Thank you, Tom. That is a lovely quick summary. No, go on. Carry on.
I just feel like it's going to influence a lot more filmmakers to actually go into it and actually feel like it's a lot, not easier, but it's a lot more, people care about films more than they did 10 years ago because there's a lot more people paying for them to be made, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, guys.
I think it depends on how Hollywood tackles the new films which they're making. If they go back to the late 1990s when the films weren't particularly high quality on the whole, then people are just going to flock to Netflix rather than cinemas.
I think it's going to have a really pretty big democratizing effect. I mean, watching Mr. Robot for nowadays, it's got a far lower kind of production budget in a way. But they're doing some amazingly artistic, creative, and very enjoyable stuff with it. It's obviously not got the budget of, I don't know, a massive Hollywood blockbuster film for the sake of their 10-episode series. But that's getting people noticed, actors noticed, directors noticed. That are going to be the future of the cinema.
Guys, thank you for summing that up first. Guys, thank you for listening to Box Office on Leeds Student Radio. I've had a great time with everyone today. Rory Ellis, we'll be getting those two free tickets to the High Pipe Picture House to you. Thank you for tweeting to us. Guys, until next week, goodbye.
See you later.
See you later.